now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Hauck.
Well, hello, hello, everybody. Good afternoon, everyone, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. I'm very excited to be with you here today and every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Standard Time, and any other time in between, because each and every week these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of our spirituality and our mental health, because it may seem as though the two don't go hand in hand, but actually the two disciplines, the two themes integrate quite nicely. I'm Dr. James Hauck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about today's show, I invite you to visit the website. That's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity, all one word there. And if you would like to call in to be part of the show today, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008, and I will be taking your calls after the break. And just also wanted to remind everybody that, these broadcasts are podcasted now, so in case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. And also proud to announce that these shows are now available for download on Audible and through Amazon Music. So if you have a subscription to those venues, you can access these broadcasts. And I also wanted to take this opportunity just to thank you over the past year and a half. That just also want to remind you that you now have an opportunity also to continue your support by becoming a monthly subscriber. Now, just a quick note on that a monthly subscription is not required to listen to or access the talk shows, but it is greatly appreciated. So again, just invite you to go to the website and click on the link and choose any amount you feel comfortable giving. And I certainly do appreciate that. Well, let me begin today's broadcast by just reminding all of us just what reclaiming authenticity is all about. I still have people who ask me, you know, they're intrigued by the title, they're intrigued by the description, but they're still not quite sure of like, well, what does that have to do with me? So let me put it this way. It really doesn't matter who we are or where we were born or even into what family we were placed. Ours is a world filled with relationships. You know, and indeed, we are social beings who often spend our lives trying to make sense out of our world just by trying to find our place in the world. And as social beings, it's often within the context of relationships themselves that we experience tremendous amounts of pain and suffering. And this could be anything from overt acts of betrayal and cruelty that somebody has inflicted against us, or vice versa, to simply being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And as a result, many people bear the scars now of the physical, psychological, emotional, and even spiritual woundedness. And as I'll be talking about in this show, it's basically about how we tell those stories. That is, you know, as we share our stories and our background and our experiences with one another, do we often share these stories from a place of woundedness? Or let's say, do we share our stories and our experiences from a place of disappointment? And depending on how long we've been carrying around this brokenness, we might even tell our stories from a deeper place of bitterness. But ironically, just as we experience that woundedness in relationships, it's also within the context of healthy relationships that we can find our greatest source of healing. And we can actually find our voice, and we can reclaim our authenticity. And you see, the difficulty then is often finding that courage within ourselves to discover that which has always been in us. You know, those gifts and graces, the skills and our uniqueness that we already come into the world with. And this is something that the Franciscan, Scottish Franciscan scholar John Duns Scotus coined the term hacheatas. It's this-ness that we all have that is totally unique. You know, just like a thumbprint. You know, no two thumbprints are alike. Well, so too, no two people have the same this-ness or hacheatas. Because I am a firm believer that we all come into this world with everything we need for ourselves and for others. But through various experiences, we may have given away parts of ourselves, if not all of ourselves, and all of that uniqueness or all of that thisness. And maybe we did so because we didn't feel that we could measure up to somebody else's expectations of us. And a little bit more of that thisness just was gone. Or perhaps we hid our uniqueness from others in order to survive abuse. Or perhaps those aspects of ourselves have been taken away from us, and we didn't have the strength to fight back, and a little bit more of that thisness starts to fade. Well, at any rate, when we become aware that we have done these things, you know, there's no shame and guilt involved. It's not a fault issue, but it's like perhaps we did what we needed to do in order to survive. But now, let's say that we're older, we want to do more than just survive from day to day to day. We want to thrive. We want to really grow. We want to reclaim those authentic places or pieces of ourselves, I should say, within us. And so whenever we become aware that we have done these things, it does take tremendous courage to reclaim who we are, because we often have to wade through years and years of some pretty ugly things, some things that that we're not proud of, or some things that may have been just overladen with guilt or shame. But whenever we do this, we can find our healing, and we can reclaim our voice. We can reclaim our uniqueness. We can reclaim our thisness. And when this occurs, we soon discover that we're going to start to tell our stories of transformation from a different place in us, a place of healing, a place of wholeness, and most certainly a place of gratitude. Well, here we are in coming into the middle of October, and you know, I just have to say that we are going through some difficult times, to say the least. And one of those aspects of suffering through national tragedies and even local or national or local communities is that it affects everybody, even down to the smallest towns and communities in our nation. And yet, with every loss that we experience in our lives, every disappointment, every tragedy that we have ever faced, sooner or later, it all presents us with this challenge. Will this experience make me bitter, or will this experience make me better? And this is where I find most people struggling between the two. I mean, many people ask me how. How does going through a past experience have the potential to make me bitter, and how does it have the potential to make me better? Well, let's begin by let's flip this question around a little bit. You know, maybe instead of a this or that question or either or kind of a question, maybe instead, you know, how about we realize that there is so much more to us than what we have become so far? And this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about. You know, finding that courage to reclaim that which has always been with us from the very, very beginning. And therefore, the potential for us to become better is always there for us to realize and to embrace and to live out on a daily basis. Well, as I said earlier, I'm going to be taking your calls after the break because I would really like to hear from you on today's subject, the Falling with Grace, Freddie the Leaf's Wisdom. Okay. And, it really, it's kind of an interesting title. And I don't know if you know where that comes from, but it's actually a title of a children's book, The Fall of Freddie the Leaf. And you may even have a copy at home or, it's a great read. It's a very, very short book. I'd say at the most 25 pages, 30, if that. Most people are just misled into thinking that The Fall of Freddie the Leaf, because of the title itself, is meant for children. Well, it has much deeper lessons for us adults. And I have to be honest, I never heard of The Fall of Freddie the Leaf as a kid. I was busy reading Dr. Seuss and other, books like that. But when I got older, actually, it wasn't until I got into graduate school that I came across this book, The Fall of Freddie the Leaf. And I read it just out of curiosity, and I loved it. I love the wisdom. I love just the simplicity. And I could really see the expressions on children's faces as, let's say, they were reading it, or even if it's read to them, because it does have some, pretty vibrant, colorful pictures in every page or on every page. And the wisdom there is so simplistic, but there's such a depth to it. So let's begin by taking a page out of this most beloved children's book, The Fall of Freddie the Leaf. Okay? Well, on one level, this book is about the change of seasons, but it's often portrayed through the eyes of Freddie as he, he's a leaf and he watches the other leaves on the tree, on his branch grow. And he watches them enjoy the sunshine and how they were tossed about with the wind and the rain. And they would go through the seasons, spring and summer, and just enjoyed the warmth and watching the people below. And then with the season of autumn, there was this change of colors and then eventually, turning brown and brittle. And then finally, he, along with others, let go of their branches and fell to the earth with grace. As they fell down, they saw the whole tree that they were attached to, not just the branch. And once they landed softly on the ground, they eventually became nourishment for the soil. And the cycle begins with every change of season, from the winter and then going into the spring and the summer and the fall and the winter and so on and so on and so on. Well, as I said, great, great children's story. But on the other hand, this book also teaches us the importance of yielding through change. You see, many of us, whether or not we want to admit it, many of us often struggle with the uncertainty of change. And more importantly, the transitions that we go through. And this is often what we struggle with the most because we, without our knowledge right away, we allow fear to come in and take over. And we often end up reacting to circumstances instead of responding to them, in healthier ways. And this is the grace piece. So reacting and responding. And yes, there is a difference between the two. Whenever we react to something, we often do so out of fear, or we often react to something out of worry or anxiety. And it happens so quickly that we just go there automatically because we're so used to going there for so long. And this is what we see happening throughout the world today, with all the violence and uncertainty and people's reactions with some pretty strong emotions attached to it. But yet, on the other hand, whenever we respond, not react to, but we respond to circumstances, we do so by replying and acting in a way that allows us to transition smoothly. Now, yes, we act and we do, but more importantly, we find that whenever we respond to circumstances, it has more of a positive outcome because it looks optimistically instead of, let's say, a knee-jerk reaction, which is often driven by that fear, worry, or anxiety. Okay, so whenever we act and we do out of, you know, how we respond to circumstances, we find ourselves just becoming more present and we are able to remain in that circumstance and we can even persist through that circumstance. But this doesn't mean that we do nothing. You know, instead, we often discover that it's a time when we let go in order to take on something better. Okay? And this is where, again, grace is coming in. We discover it just might be a time to let go in order to take on something better. And not just to take on something better, but rather for us to be better than what we were before. You know, we can be more resilient, or we could be better prepared and for next time, and perhaps most importantly, we're able to recognize in ourselves where there is still room for us to grow in our awareness and our acceptance and our allowance, no matter where we are in our day. It creates this intuitiveness in us. It creates this awareness, but it also creates in us a sense of being in the moment instead of being back in the past or being so pulled into the future. We can simply be present. And as we walk our spiritual path, and yes, everybody has a spiritual path, we encounter things in our lives that compel us to let go of. You know, it could be anything from, you know, letting go of pain or loss in our lives. We can let go of shattered assumptions or expectations that have never been met. And we can certainly let go of the emotional wounding of others. But again, we do not simply let go for the sake of letting go. We do so that we can take on healing and we can take on perseverance and we can take on grace and peace and inner freedom and joy and gratitude and unconditional love towards ourselves and others. We let go of in order to take on something better. The Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung used to say, I'm not what happened to me. I am what I choose to become. I am not what happened to me. I am what I choose to become. So you can hear the underlying tone of that responding to circumstances. That yes, we do have choices, and yes, we're able to do and act and think and so forth. But again, as we respond, we are unfolding of, you know, the future in ways in which we are becoming, but maybe we are not there yet. But if we go a little bit deeper within ourselves, we realize that we came into the world with some pretty, pretty incredible things. Not just things, I should say, but simply who we are. That is a soul. And every journey I've been on has always taught me about how genuineness and authenticity in relationships are very much tangible. I mean, these are not just pie-in-the-sky abstract thoughts. These are very down-to-earth, tangible things that we can put our hands on and things that we can live out on that daily basis. But it does indeed require a lifelong commitment to self-discovery and honesty. And this is where, again, grace is coming in, because whenever we commit ourselves to that discovery of who we are and we are honest about who we are, we might discover that we have some scars. We might discover that we have some pretty incredible gifts. We might discover that we may be filled with phobias and fears. We might discover that we have some just very powerful strengths and graces and everything. Well, unfortunately, this commitment to walking a spiritual path is a price that many people consider just too high to pay and not worth their time. And I've heard people say this to me as I shared this same message with them, people I counsel, and they would say, well, you know, wouldn't it just be easier to be satisfied with the status quo? You know, go with the flow and not question. Well, of course, that just might be the frequently traveled road. But we also shouldn't deceive ourselves either, because this inner desire for genuineness and authenticity in relationships with ourselves and others and God, that's not going to go away. Right? Because moreover, this internal longing to be more authentic and truer to ourselves is only going to get stronger. And I can speak clearly from experience, and I'm sure you can too. You know, just the gentle nudgings of God and this inner desire to be more authentic. And we try to push it away and it only comes back a little bit stronger. And we try to push it down and it comes back a little bit stronger until we are faced with looking at it square in the eye and say, okay, what do I have to change? What do I have to heal from? Because the more I push this away, it only comes back more intensely. And so the question is, you know, how much more sleep do we want to keep losing night after night? Because these are the things that will wake us up. And let's go a little bit deeper with this. You know, let's be honest here and say, you know, and ask ourselves, how many more times are we going to blame others for what we don't have? Or let's put it this way, how many times are we going to blame somebody else for the fact that we have yet to discover the very best of who we are? Well, let's consider a moment the ancient wisdom of mountains. Okay, this, you know, this coming into the season of autumn, this especially this time of the year, the mountains just seem to light up with the vibrant colors for us to enjoy. And where I live in Pennsylvania, just being surrounded with mountains, it just looks like the mountains just were just painted overnight in just bright, bright red and yellows and oranges. And there's some browns in there and there's some greens and so forth, but it is just beautiful. And depending on where you are, I'm sure, you know, with the change of seasons and so forth, hopefully, that you take time out to appreciate just the beauty of this time of the year. And speaking of mountains, I am an avid fan of hiking. And I just wish my knees and back would enjoy it as much as my mind does. You know, it just does my heart wonders. Well, anyway, I have found that there is a striking parallel between our search for authenticity and how the ancient wisdom of mountains, literally and figuratively, give us a glimpse into our desire for psycho-spiritual transformation. In other words, mountains have a lot to teach us. Because you see, every year, every season, from rainfalls to snowfalls, from generation to generation, mountains remain what we would call the stable giants in our landscape. And since the beginning of time, people have had a fascination with mountains, and often spending their lives and small fortunes climbing the highest mountains in the world. Okay, and maybe this appeal to climb comes from our attraction to a mountain's immensity and majesty, or maybe it's to satisfy the sense of a higher calling in our lives. But at any rate, people today are being led inwardly and led to withdraw from society and to live in these mountains and to develop their spiritual abilities and connect with the yearning that the spiritual leaders, you know, were on as they shared their stories of they went to seek God on the mountaintop. And let me just share just a couple of examples of this. In ancient China, China itself records five sacred directional mountains that stretch across its country, in which the sages would often dwell and emperors made lifelong pilgrimages to seek the blessings of heaven. And these mountaintops, or these five peaks, are very central to the religion of Taoism, that is, living in harmony with the way or the path. And the mountains were considered very powerful spiritual locations that paralleled these cardinal directions and were believed to be the pillars that separated heaven from earth. And according to ancient Chinese cosmology, the realm of heaven covered the realm of earth. And from this belief came the idea that heaven could fall down on us if it wasn't supported. And thus, the different energies of these mountains influenced the spiritual traditions that grew on each of them, and as the mountains themselves were believed to house spiritual energies. And because of these spiritual energies, they kept heaven from falling down on the earth. It just supported heaven. It supported this separation. Well, there's another example. Kirkpatrick is probably the most important Catholic pilgrimage destination in Ireland. And following in the footsteps of St. Patrick, who spent, I believe it was 40 days fasting on Kirkpatrick, the mountain, in somewhere around the year 441 AD, well, nearly 1 million pilgrims climbed to the top every year. And they follow the belief that St. Patrick rang a bell so loudly that the sound drove all the evil spirits and the snakes out of Ireland. And, you know, for the most people, then the pilgrimage to the top of the sacred mountain is an act of penance, and often remembering St. Patrick's devotion by reaching the summit either on their knees or walking barefoot. And I had climbed Kirkpatrick. It was just a beautiful time, unfortunately, the time of the year that I was there. It was misting. It was raining. And if you've ever climbed Kirkpatrick, that mountain is nothing but shale. And if you know anything about shale, once it gets wet, it gets very slippery. So I got about three quarters of the way up, and I was slipping and sliding, and I just said, okay, I don't want a medical emergency here in County Mayo, Ireland. So I just was coming down the mountain, and I just appreciated just the view and the beauty of the land, and just imagined myself walking with the millions and millions of people who climb to the top every year. So quite transformative. Well, Tiwa Native American mystic and ceremonial dancer, artist, and writer Joseph Rael, also known as Beautiful Painted Arrow, he also emphasizes how mountains metaphorically refer to the human heart. And he writes, the traditional form of a vision quest was to reach the top of a mountain. Now, going to the top of a mountain or any high place has the quality, symbolically, of going to the heart or center of vibration, where we search not just for ordinary awareness, but for the highest possibility in conscious awareness. The mountaintop is in the environment for the highest potential because the vibration of light there is of very high quality. It is on top of a vision quest mountain where the heart and the mind are bonded together. Well, I would really love to hear your heart and mind on this subject. So again, if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008, and I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. And I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Welcome back. I am Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, just want to share with you just a quick word about next week's show. I entitled it, So That the People Will Live, Creating a Living Dialogue with One's Ancestors. Creating a living dialogue with one's ancestors, okay? And there's a lot packed into that because every now and then I run into a misperception out there today that before we can help others, you know, you have to be free from your own pain and suffering, you know, first to be healed from your own problems or at least have your act together. And quite often, many people misquote Jesus's teaching about taking the plank out of your own eye first before removing the speck of sawdust from another eye. And when this passage is taken out of context, many people wrongly interpret this teaching to mean that others do not have the right to say anything, or people should just simply mind their own business. But this is not what it's saying here, and this is certainly not the case. In fact, it turns out to be just the opposite, because in spite of themselves, people find ways to reach out and serve others in various and unique ways. So we don't always have to have our act together first in order to reach out and help somebody. So, but let's save that thought for next Friday. So invite you to tune in next Friday. I believe that would be October 16th at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Standard Time. Well, in the first half of the broadcast, we were talking about the book, The Fall of Freddie the Leaf. And as I was saying, you know, we often think that this book is, you know, just for children only. But in reality, it has a deeper lesson for adults. Namely, it teaches us the importance of yielding through change. Because you see, many of us often struggle with that uncertainty of change. We don't like mystery. You know, we don't like it when we're faced with something and all we see is a bunch of question marks. You know, we're kind of in that liminal space where, you know, from what we or where we are, I should say, to what we know, and then going to what we don't know yet, there is this level of uncertainty. There are question marks. There's this mystery. And we often don't like that. Okay. And it's something that, you know, whenever we go through transitions, it's something that we struggle with the most. Because we do allow fear to come in and take over. We would say, well, how do I know I'm going to do this right? And how do I know it's going to work out for the best? And how do we know this? And how do we know that? You know, are we guaranteed success? If I'm not guaranteed success, I'm not even going to bother. And it just, we just, you know, run with statements like that in our minds. And as I said, we often end up reacting to circumstances instead of responding. And as I said, you know, there is a difference between the two. You know, whenever we react to something, we often do so out of fear or worry or anxiety. In other words, if I'm not guaranteed success, I'm not even going to bother because I don't want to look foolish. I don't want to be embarrassed. Okay. And so forth. Or what if I make a mistake? What if this is wrong? And so forth. And, you know, we see this happening all throughout the world, you know, with the violence and uncertainty and people's reactions and so forth. It's very much fear-driven, phobia-driven, okay? And yet, on the other hand, we also have this opportunity to be able to respond to our circumstances. And we do so by replying and acting in a way that allows us to transition, what I say, smoothly. And yes, we can act and do, but more importantly, we become present. We remain, we persist, and we can stand firm. And as I also said, there is a striking parallel between our search for authenticity and how the ancient wisdom of mountains gives us a glimpse into our desire for just a deeper psycho-spiritual transformation. And indeed, mountains have so much to teach us. And this time of the year has so much to teach us. Okay. Well, indeed, it appears that people from various cultures and religions and languages recognize a psycho-spiritual connection to at least one of the hundreds of mountains throughout the world. In fact, depending on if you have a favorite mountain and if you've ever climbed to a mountaintop and looked over a valley or even just taken in the sight, you know how this view has changed you. It can be breathtaking. And if we're up high enough, we can look at the six directions: above, below, north, south, east, west. And we can really grasp the proportion of just how small we are in comparison to the vast world in which we live. And maybe it is this realization that we are drawn to mountains because we are stirred to reconnect with our hearts, as Beautiful Painted Arrow has stated. And throughout history, many battles have been fought on or close to mountains, and perhaps this is a means of reflecting the heart's inner struggle. And perhaps we might even climb mountains to get away from such a disconnected world and conditional relationships, to be able to reconnect with ourselves and God. And yet, when we gaze at or we climb mountains, we may not realize the physical, the psychological, the emotional, and spiritual interdependence we have with mountains for our survival and well-being. For example, not only humanity, but also wildlife depend upon mountains for its agricultural and forest benefits, as well as for sources of water and other nutrients. And we have become dependent on the minerals, such as coal or iron ore or shale, methane, copper, gold, clay, silver, nickel, chromium, etc., for our everyday use. And yet still, there is a lot of talk these days, and I know it's been going on for years now, about reducing our carbon footprints from eliminating those greenhouse gases and industrial emissions and the effects of mining to the global warming debate and conservation or climate change. And yet, what I don't hear included in these conversations is how the damaging effects of our carbon footprints clearly mimic the damaging effects of our interpersonal footprints have on one another. And this is what I mean. Today, it's often considered the norm, and in some places, the expectation, that people will walk all over another person, to lie, to cheat, to steal, and then expect that these actions will have no psychological, emotional, or even spiritual consequences. Because if we assume this, we're gravely mistaken. And as evidenced from our attitudes and actions, we have not learned from previous generations' discoveries and mistakes. We clearly do not possess the ancient wisdom that comes from recognizing those lessons of respect and dignity and value and gratitude passed on to us in the created order of things. Or, let's put it another way, it really should be glaringly obvious that the way we treat our environmental resources and animals is a direct reflection of our attitudes and behaviors towards each other. Okay, did you catch that? The way we treat our environmental resources and animals is a direct reflection of our attitudes and behaviors towards each other. In fact, despite all of our searching for our psycho-spiritual wholeness, we might be surprised that we do not possess such wisdom yet, because we don't understand how we are spiritually and emotionally fragmented. And yet it is from this understanding that we recognize the opportunity that is before us to heal this relationship to ourselves and others and to the land. Because just like as in the fall of Freddy the Leaf, the importance of yielding is yielding through change. You see, many of us often struggle with the uncertainty of change. and more importantly, transitions that we go through. Okay. And we certainly, as I said, allow fear just to come in and it just takes over and we just do not think clearly or we do not think it through with our heart. Okay. Well, I want to share with you a little bit about my story. Again, just climbing a particular mountain and in fact, just how transformative the experience was for me. Because rarely is a journey just a journey. You know, the miles we travel are often filled with anticipation and assumptions and attitudes about what lies ahead. And this excitement often just swells our hearts. And yeah, even at times it swells our heads as we ask, I wonder what I'll find. I wonder what it would be like. How long is it going to take us to get there? And are we there yet? However, instead of sitting back and enjoying the ride, so to speak, we become fixated on answering these questions. And in fact, we may often lose sight of the transformative purpose of the journey itself. And still, we may be in the habit of asking these questions of who or what or when and where and why because of our past experiences. And indeed, where we have come from and where we have been often influences us on where we think we want to go on this journey and what we expect to find. But let us consider this thought. Now, if we behave this way when we take a physical trip, are we just as curious and anxious and impatient about our own spiritual journey? I mean, after all, we may not take this into consideration, the kind of stamina and fortitude needed to undertake such a trip. It's not a journey of haste, but it's a journey of self-discovery. It's a journey of integration. It's a journey of endurance. In fact, interestingly enough, we do not take such a psycho-spiritual journey alone. Because you see, psycho-spiritual journeys have often been misunderstood as having a linear or a logical sequence, you know, where it contains a very specific beginning and ending point. But instead, a psycho-spiritual journey is far less defined. Oh, we may point to a specific time when we realize we are seeking a psycho-spiritual path, but quite often, this kind of journey takes us into ourselves. And ultimately, it takes us beyond ourselves. And at times, the journey circles back and presents us with life lessons again. You know, those lessons that we have yet to learn, but they keep coming up because we keep reacting to them instead of responding. And these journeys are often open-ended. They're often unknown. They're even mysterious. And the psycho-spiritual journeys require a faith that takes us beyond our personal assumptions and our expectations, our personal boundaries, if you will. They take us out of our comfort zones and limitations. They take us to self-discovery and wonder, you know, maybe not so much of how far we've come, but more in terms of waking us up to realize how far we have yet to go. In fact, we should never believe that we have arrived or we've reached the end of our spiritual journey while on this earth. Because to our surprise, these journeys are more about grappling with our authenticity through the recognition of how God uses irony in our lives. In fact, however uncertain we are about what lies ahead, we can take comfort in the fact that we are never alone, because we are in full view of millions and millions of people who have gone before us. And yes, we are connected to our ancestors by our humanity and the relentless desire to pursue the one who has called us by name. And our stories connect with theirs as one continuous narrative of ironic encounters with ourselves and others and ironic encounters with God. And perhaps it's this element of irony is where we first began to see God in our lives. Well, several years ago, I found myself becoming interested in being a bridge person, one who walks between two cultures by looking for connections that could bring unity, understanding, and healing for both. And even before I had ever heard of this term, I had always found, as I would call it, just this resonating compatibility between Native American spirituality and my own Christian faith. In fact, it's through understanding, I feel, through understanding another's religion and spirituality that I have come to be better in understanding my own. For example, my own faith has been enhanced by Native American traditions that celebrate God as the creator and sustainer and redeemer of this world. And through Native songs and dances and traditions, I have also discovered a stronger connection to all living things, as well as a deeper responsibility of being a good steward, to care for all that I have been gifted with. I'm not alone in this discovery. You know, certainly these and other similar beliefs have been celebrated among Christian and Native Americans. Unfortunately, I am also aware of the history, which also has revealed times of Christianity's extreme prejudice and intolerance and, shall I say, strong-armed conversions towards Native people, which contributes to intergenerational post-traumatic stress and internalized oppression among Native Americans even to this day. Well, in his book, Mountains Beyond Mountains, which is another great read. It came out in like 2003, I believe. Mountains Beyond Mountains. A Harvard professor and a medical doctor, Paul Farmer, he used his skills of contemporary medicines and he went to live with Haiti's most vulnerable people. And again, ironically, it's in the mountains of Haiti where he encounters the ongoing spread of communicable diseases such as HIV and tuberculosis, and the people live there with little to no medicine. And through his medical and political efforts, Dr. Farmer brought hope to those who live in despair by supplying medicine to improve their lives. And interestingly, this whole book, this whole story, is set against the background of a Haitian proverb, "Beyond mountains, there are mountains." And a loose translation would be, "It seems as though once you solve one problem, another problem arises," and so forth. So in other words, you climb one mountain, and then there's another mountain to climb, and then there's another mountain to climb. Beyond mountains, there are mountains. Well, being on a psycho-spiritual journey and being on this path towards reclaiming our authenticity doesn't necessarily guarantee us avoiding the obstacles of, let's say, emerging mountains or one problem after another. In fact, if anything, a psycho-spiritual journey makes us even more aware of the mountains in our lives. And it may seem strange, but again, I'm a firm believer that this awareness, I really see it as a gift from God that produces a kind of lived wisdom that enables us to climb with perseverance and climb with endurance and climb even with patience, especially with ourselves. But a word of caution here. Just because we have successfully scaled one mountain in our life doesn't mean we've scaled them all. Each mountain has its own distinct ancient wisdom and challenges we need to hear and integrate into our lives, especially once we have reached its summit. Well, despite our perceived differences in race and language, religion and culture, there is a common Native American expression that really emphasizes this interconnectedness among all that we see. Namely, we are all related. This phrase is understood by the Lakota Sioux people as an expression that extends to all of creation. I mean, everything. Humanity, animals, vegetation, minerals, the elements, land, water, and thunder, and fire, and wind, and sun, and moon, the stars, etc., are all connected to one another, and each one affects another. And for too long, you know, humanity has been influenced by the what's in it for me scenario. And as much as we can become enthralled by our gifts and our graces and giftedness, we just simply have to remember that our talents and skills and blessings and knowledge and wisdom, these things are not for ourselves. These gifts are for the benefit of others. And reclaiming our authenticity then certainly compels us to now ask, how can I use what I have been given? How can I serve somebody else? How can I serve humanity? How can I alleviate suffering? How can we speak up for those who do not have a voice? I mean, this is what authenticity is really all about, isn't it? I mean, some people might say that they're content with being who they are. But we always have to ask ourselves each and every day, you know, am I being authentic today? Am I being honest? And am I being genuine in my relationships? And why are we waiting till we are retired, whenever that will be, to do what we've always dreamed of doing? I've heard that with so many people. You know, they say, well, when I'm done working, I'll be able to have enough time to do this and such and so forth. Or, well, okay, I have to work at this job or this position or something for another 10 years, and then I can retire, and then I can go do whatever it is I want to do. What are we waiting for? I mean, we're not guaranteed tomorrow. We don't know that we are going to be around, so to speak, in 10 years or so. And if we're waiting to have all of our bills paid or having enough money in the bank. And it's unfortunate, you know, that too many people play the I'll get around to it someday game, while the vulnerable and the wounded people are in need right now. You see, they may not have 10 years. Such hurting people need others to see in them the potential to live authentically, including the benefit of reclaiming their authenticity. And maybe some people think that they have too much to lose to be authentic. Maybe they don't know, or they fear people will not accept them as they are. You know, is there a point of being too genuine, too authentic? Perhaps they have a fear of maybe that rejection or ridicule or shame, or they're going to be ostracized or even shunned. And the Native Americans also have a saying, you know, that's passed down from ancient times, this ancient wisdom, that the strength of a tree comes not from growing thicker in the good years where there is water, but from staying alive in the bad and dry times. We live in a time when, as we focus on the virtue of stewardship, the one gift that we need to foster and treasure is the gift of ourself, the gift of our inner life, the gift of our spirit of resiliency, if you will. Because there is great value in reclaiming our authenticity, because we find an inner freedom and an inner strength, a peace and assurance of who we are, without giving away our thisness, without giving away our uniqueness, playing by somebody else's rules or definitions or expectations. I mean, for some, finding their inner strength to stand on their own two feet is going to further empower them to reach out for better relationships, maybe even better jobs, maybe even justice that they were denied before. Indeed, for those who are authentic, often find God's blessing. And I believe this, you know, again, wholeheartedly, I believe this is where the next great spiritual awakening is going to come from, finding the strength to reclaim our authenticity. Because the more we recognize the presence of God in our lives, the more we experience an empathic resonance. Namely, that's our soul coming into resonance with the soul of God. Because what we discover in being more fully connected to the soul of God is that we are connected to things that bring us great joy, as well as being connected to things that are also disturbing and can cause great suffering. But still, we embrace it all, to be an extension of God's presence, and to be an extension of God's presence, grace, and healing for people who are looking and listening for God's presence in their lives. Everything is laid out for you. Your path is straight ahead. Sometimes it's visible, but it's there. You may not know where it's going, but you still have to follow that path, because it's the path to the soul of the Creator. And that's the only path there is. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. I invite you to tune in next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Time. And again, we will be discussing matters of integrating our spirituality and our mental health. So in the meantime, everybody, please be safe out there. May everybody please behave yourselves. And until we meet again, may God hold us in the palm of God's hands. Take care. Bye-bye.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific Time on PBS Radio TV.